Today, the topic of my talk is tears. Are they the healing elixir? Everybody knows what tears are. They're the water droplets that form in and around the eyes of people. When they're profuse, when they're abundant, the drops turn into streams that run down the face and neck. And if there are just a few, they may just glisten in the eyes, trying to decide whether to disappear or to become a river that runs down the face. Human beings make up meanings for things. Often those meanings are devoid of any kind of factual basis, but we can still adopt the meanings and form beliefs with false foundations. So we make up this stuff, and then we live by it, whether it's true or not. I'm going to use both facts and about tears and made-up meanings about tears, so stay tuned. The purpose of these efforts is my desire to understand tears better. In other words, I want to explore this concept of tears and whether tears are the healing elixir. For a fact, we know that tears result when dirt or some other foreign object or particles like dust or pollen get into our eyes. In this case, tears are a healing, repairing tool to cleanse and to protect the eyes from being damaged. Washing away dirt is a good idea for our eyes. Tears are protectors of the eyes. That sounds like a fact. I see advertising regularly for a condition called dry eyes. People without the necessary lubrication of eye fluids must be having painful difficulty blinking. Of course, the pharmaceutical industry has produced non-natural treatments for this problem. Well, we know that tears form when dirt, dust, pollen, etc. get into the eyes. What else causes the eyes to form tears? The most obvious answer to me is grief. Grief causes tears to form and tears to fall. Physical pain causes tears. Other emotions such as anger cause tears to form. Regret and guilt do too. Compassion for others can cause tears for us. Even joy and happiness can bring on tears. Tears of joy, tears of happiness. We've heard those expressions. Depressed people have many tear-filled moments. The feelings of helplessness produce tears. Relief from depression and helplessness can also cause tears to flow. Let's look at some facts about tears. Tears indicate that the body can produce tears. Now, that statement seems kind of self-evident and maybe even silly. I have tears, so that means I can produce tears. Boys have been taught that tears are a sign of weakness. But is that true? Or are tears a sign of strength? Recently, President Obama showed tears discussing the children who have been murdered by people with guns. Anybody who is insisting that we need more guns, not fewer guns, we need less control of guns, poked fun at him for having tears, for being upset that children get murdered by guns. Tears tell you and others that you had the courage to invest energy. You invested energy with your heart into a relationship. You took that risk. That's no small thing. People can play it safe by only connecting through their heads. Well, yeah, my relationship is all about I think I'm in love. Those people who only approach things from their head are doing so because they want to protect their hearts. They don't want to risk feeling. That statement it is better to have loved and lost than not have loved at all, is pointed at the truth that to avoid love because of the potential pain that might come from losing that love is to avoid the main purpose in life. Main purpose, to love and to be loved. That two-way flow of high vibration energy that would connect us to others. Other people, other things, pets, causes, anything that we're willing to invest our heart in. If we're not willing to love and be loved and risk that, how else does energy come to us? I mean, how else do we get this energy that we are ultimately going to translate uniquely based upon our personalities and belief system and level of consciousness, and then offer it to others? If we're not willing to risk being loved, and to risk being loved is to resist or risk losing that love. On the day that I wanted to talk about this, and this is today, it's raining outside. We know from experience that rain cleanses the air. So if you've been in any place where it's smog or there's a lot of dust because of the dryness and then it rains, the quality of air after the rain is so fantastic because it's been cleansed by the rain. When I lived in Panama, those really strong afternoon rains literally cleaned the streets. So during the day, maybe there was litter around, but then when the rain started to fall and they fell, it swept the streets clean of any kind of litter or debris. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to recognize that the rain nourishes plants and crops and lawns, and anything growing in the environment is going to be nourished by that rain falling. Rain is analogous to tears. Rain is good. Even as a child, you probably said at more than one occasion, my day is ruined because it's raining. I wanted it to be sunshine. I wanted to go play outside, and it required it to be dry and sunny. But it rained instead. And when we complain about it raining because it interfered with our playing, we overlooked the value of the rain. And maybe it was never made clear to us. I accept the rain. Our dog Nikki Nouveau, when I would take her outside in the backyard and it would be raining, I would try to hurry her up. Nikki, hurry, hurry. Come on, let's get back in the house. She would just kind of look around, sniff around, trying to see what other animals had traipsed through her backyard. She was completely unconcerned with the fact that it was raining. So when I noticed that it's no big deal to her, and I'm making it a big deal for me, I might get a few raindrops on me, oh my goodness, I decided that I was going to do what Nikki did and not be bothered by the rain. So if she wanted to wander around the backyard, sniffing here and sniffing there, I just stood and observed her. It was no big deal. Instead of spending all my time imagining that getting a few raindrops on me was a problem, I decided Nikki was right. It was not a problem. I accepted the rain. I accept tears. As a young boy and a young man, I was bothered by my feelings. I didn't want people to know I had feelings. I thought they were a sign of weakness. It was like you're giving something away. It was, even as a young child, before I understood the idea of a poker face, I want to have a poker face. I want to go through life with a poker face so nobody can know what's going on inside of me. Like that was a good thing. Well, it might be a good thing when you're playing poker, but it's not a good thing when you're playing life. I wanted to be like the stars of cowboy movies, like John Wayne or Gary Cooper. So they're battling people, the bad guys, in barroom fights, and they're getting hit with chairs and tables and hitting people with chairs and tables. And no tears. No pain. Well, if pain didn't stop them from doing what they needed to do, pick up the next chair and hit the guy with it, I thought, that's what I want to be. That's what I want to be. I want to have the same level of emotionality as an oak tree. I wanted to be a rock. I didn't want to feel pain. I didn't want to feel emotions because I felt like I couldn't control them. If I could push a button and tears would only fall after I pushed a button, hey, no problem. But I knew already that that wasn't true. They fell when they needed to fall. And I didn't like that. I felt exposed. I felt vulnerable. I felt like I was showing signs of weakness. I felt sure that my life would be better if I were better defended against tears, feelings, and risks. I didn't want to feel so much. I have since changed my mind. And that change occurred when I discovered that my walls that I put up to protect me, these defenses, this suit of armor, these barriers, they not only kept out feelings and hurt and sensitivity, they kept out joy and feelings of happiness and silliness and fun. It was bad news. I protected myself from life. As a kid, I wanted to be like Superman. I had other heroes too, like Tarzan, Rama of the Jungle, and Buster Crabbe in the French Foreign Legion. But Superman, I wanted his attributes. I wanted to have super hearing, super eyesight, hyper strength, super speed, super high level of morality and ethics, and so I was like a super good guy. I didn't realize that all of these attributes involve super sensitivity. In order to hear, you have to be sensitive to sound waves. Like, oh, I didn't understand that. In order to be able to see, you have to be sensitive to light. Oh, I didn't understand that. In order to perceive on an intuitive level, you had to be sensitive on some other level besides the five senses. I didn't understand that. In order to have super sense of smell, to be able to perceive aromas and tastes, you needed to be sensitive. I didn't realize that. And if you have super feelings, super sensitivity, in order to be super, as a processor of information, you are going to have tears. I like simple images and diagrams to express ideas. When I say flat line, most people will understand the words to mean the image of a flat line on a medical device in a hospital, meaning that signs of life have disappeared, and that flat line means the person has died. On the other hand, on that medical device, if there are waves with peaks and valleys going up and going down and going up and down, this would mean that there's a certain level of vitality still exists within that person who's being monitored. If we go through life, and I've tried this, trying to prevent the valleys of our experiences, I don't want to have bad feelings, I don't want to have these negative emotions, I don't want to have these feelings of grief and loss and hurt and anger, I don't want to have this sort of thing. If we have that attitude, we will be reducing the peaks that otherwise would be available to us. Can't just eliminate the valleys without impacting our access to the peak experiences. If we did, we'd literally be literally choosing to configure our lives and our activities to be more like a flat line. And if you offered that to somebody, it's like, you want to live a life that's closer to death and further away from exuberant living? Most of us would agree. Exuberant living, enthusiastic living, would be much more appealing. Otherwise, we would be stifling our own lives through the attitude that is based upon self-protection. But in fact, when you protect yourself from your own life, when you protect yourself from your own potential, when you protect yourself from your own creativity and your own experiences, that doesn't sound like self-protection. It sounds more like being put in prison. When we can admit to ourselves and maybe to others how much our hearts we have given to them, we can feel. Everybody is trying to be, and I had this as a teenager, I wanted to be calm, cool, and collected. Calm, cool, and collected. Somehow that phrase and that image was appealing to somebody, which meant you couldn't really feel anything because why? I'm calm, cool, and collected. Are you really enthusiastic? No, I'm not. I'm calm, cool, and collected. Are you engaged? Are you really committed to this? No, I'm calm, cool, and collected. Which is another way of saying I was afraid to engage in life. You go, wow. If we can admit how much of our hearts we have given to someone or something, we can feel. If we've lost them through death or separation in other ways, we can cry. When their absence feels like the air being sucked out of our lungs, we can cry. When we can cry, we are allowing at least two things, probably a lot more, but the two things that really come to mind are we're admitting that we have a wound. We have a wound. We feel it. It's real. And we're not trying to deny it by distracting ourselves or trying to become cool and collected or nonchalant or not engaged. And if we could admit the wound, we can cry. Which brings me to that second point. We're allowing our tears to cleanse the wound. That is no small thing. The intense grief and the abundance fear that I've been dealing with since December 3rd, 2015 are because my Marianne died. But we don't need a monumental loss like this in order to deal with grief, in order to cry, in order to have tears flow. As children, every single one of us experienced loss. Just by being born, I'm convinced we have experienced loss and grief. By being separated from our mothers when the umbilical cord was cut, we experience loss. And when you look at the conditions we experienced in life, I'm thinking we expected one thing, maybe unconditional love, maybe a lot of different things, and when those expectations didn't come to fruition, we experienced loss. And those would be wounds. If we can recognize I have loss, I have wounds, they can be healed. We can heal those early experiences if we're courageous enough to look at them, if we're diligent enough to look at them, if we're, I don't know, aware enough to say, you know what, I've been trying to protect myself my entire life. Why would I do that? Well, why would we need to protect ourselves? Because we would have experienced the feelings of lack of protection, where we would have lost something. Those wounds, those losses, those griefs, those hurts, that pain on one or more levels is what we're trying to prevent in the future. And if we started that as early as birth, we've done a lot of trying to protect ourselves. If we can look for these hurts that we've experienced, these pains, these losses, these wounds, and cry tears, admit them instead of denying them, instead of pretending they don't count, the past is past. I don't think so. I don't think so. We can heal those wounds. If we can feel it, we can heal it. Otherwise, it'll be on the shelf somewhere, and we're pretending that it's not there in our inventory of energy patterns. But of course, it is there because we've experienced it. And if we haven't resolved it and converted it and translated it and released what we can't use and expressed what we can use, it's sitting there affecting us. And for a lot of people, I've been thinking about that. No. Feeling is different than thinking about it. Feeling is healing. It's not weakness, it's strength. I would say that tears are the healing elixir. They get us back in balance. They cleanse the wound. They help us see the truth about our hearts. And tears heal grief. They heal regret. They heal guilt. I would like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized and modified version of the prayer from Letter 8 in Christ Returns. Mary Ann, to me, represents the clearest example of love that I've ever personally come across. Hence the modification to the prayer. Father, Mother, Life, Mary Ann, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us again and again and again and again. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know that this is possible. We believe you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal, loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness. And as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves, our lives, our families, and our friends into your care. Thank you It is so. Amen.